Thank you, Chair. My delegation thanks you for convening this debate and organizing the panelists. Like others, we express deep sadness for the loss of life and devastation caused by the flooding in Brazil. Colleagues, on the topic of disarmament and development, I could not explain any better what was said by my colleague from France and through the questions raised by the distinguished UK ambassador to the panel. We joined both of these countries in a joint explanation of vote on this matter at UN First Committee last fall. Secretary Blinken stated at the UN Sustainable Development Goals Summit last year that the Sustainable Development Goals remain one of the most powerful vehicles to forge a better future, one without extreme poverty or hunger, where individuals have better health and education and can thrive in peaceful societies on a livable planet. U.S. Arms Control and International Security Undersecretary Bonnie Jenkins further reaffirmed that international security and the SDGs can be mutually reinforcing. Prosperity, in our view, is founded on peace, and our work on issues of international security provides the bedrock on which to build and ensure peace and stability. The United States has invested, consistent with these commitments and values, over $100 billion for poverty reduction, food security, global health, and economic growth in 2022 and 2023. That sum has only grown since. We are also the largest contributor to demining and weapons removal and abatement in countries of every region of the world. President, on the matter of export controls raised by several delegations, the United States strongly supports broad and equitable access to goods and technologies, including dual-use goods that facilitate economic trade. We believe all countries should benefit from technologies that hold the promise to enrich lives, create prosperity, and solve global challenges. It is vital to pair this equitable access to dual-use goods with the reassurance that those goods are not undermining international or regional security. Many countries who have spoken today are beneficiaries of millions of dollars, euros, yuan, and yen in capacity-building investments about export control regimes to the benefit of their economies and their prosperity. We should also keep things in perspective. Export controls apply to less than 1% of all global trade. Among the small number of transactions where export controls have applied over the past few decades, only a single-digit percentage of export license applications have been denied. There is no evidence that strategic trade controls, including the multilateral export control regimes, hamper the international exchange of technology for peaceful uses or hinder any country's economic development. We believe that export controls do not limit global access to technology. Rather, export controls promote and enable access by building confidence that technology transfers will not contribute to the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction or to advanced conventional weapons and dual-use components for non-peaceful purposes. Chair, turning to some regional issues that have been raised by others, with regard to several interventions related to the Middle East, I'd like to draw conference members' attention to an address and question and answer session yesterday by U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. He spoke clearly about President Biden's views on the matters of Iran's regional behavior and the ongoing war between Israel and Hamas. He said, quote, "Israel's long-term security depends on being integrated into the region and enjoying normal relations with the Arab states. Iran and its proxies have tried to take advantage of the war in Gaza to launch attacks on Israel. The threat posed by Iran and its proxies to Israel, to regional stability, and to American interests is clear. We are working with Israel and other partners to protect against these threats and to prevent escalation into an all-out regional war." He also stated, "This is a war between the State of Israel and the terrorist group Hamas, whose mission is to annihilate Israel and kill as many Jews as they can. Israel has an unusual, even unprecedented burden in fighting this war because Hamas uses hospitals and schools and other civilian facilities for military purposes and has built a vast network of military tunnels under civilian areas. That puts innocent civilians in the crossfire. It does not lessen Israel's responsibility to do all that it can to protect innocent civilians. We do not believe that what is happening in Gaza is a genocide. We still believe it would be a mistake to launch a major military operation into the heart of Rafah that would put huge numbers of civilians at risk without a clear strategic goal." The United States will continue to lead international efforts to surge humanitarian assistance throughout the Gaza Strip because innocent civilians should never go without food, water, medicine, shelter, sanitation, or other basic necessities. We are urgently and relentlessly working for a ceasefire and a hostage deal." End quote. I invite colleagues to read National Security Advisor Sullivan's full statement. Chair and colleagues, no length of intervention or number of manufactured allegations can distract from or disguise the fact that the Russian Federation unilaterally invaded the sovereign and independent state of Ukraine, not the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic to which the ambassador referred, in violation of the UN Charter. Russia could unilaterally and nearly instantly end the globally devastating and UN agency-recognized effects of its war, notably the massive negative effects on development, including food security, through its full and immediate withdrawal from internationally recognized borders of Ukraine and its return to some semblance of respect for the UN Charter. Global sanctions are a result of gravely destabilizing behavior, not the cause. The global investment in Ukraine as it defends itself against aggression is also a consequence of gravely destabilizing behavior, not its cause. As regards NATO enlargement, the best answer to Russia's allegations is a simple question. Why is it that so many states that were formerly either members of the Warsaw Pact or illegally annexed by the Soviet Union or neutral chose to fulfill the criteria to become members of the alliance? The problem here is Russia itself, not a Western conspiracy against Russia. It is Russia that presents the danger to European security, not the NATO allies. Finally, it should be clear to all that the ambassador's last allegation regarding cyber warfare, psyops, and interference in the internal affairs of other countries is really only a projection onto others of the kinds of activities that Russia itself is conducting. Let me note as well that it is Russia that refuses to talk to the United States, not vice versa. Thank you, Chair.